Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay, page 8. Summary of Adhikarana 1. Vishaya. The idea that the Sutra Shastra contradicts the Vedanta view will be refuted, right? Because their Shastras then are not in line with the Vedanta, and so they're saying that their Shastra is correct, and even the Veda is incorrect, right? So to establish the proper understanding. Shamshaya. Is the view that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the original cause of everything refuted by the Sharikya, Smriti, or not? Purvapaksha. According to Vedanta philosophy, the Sharikya, Smriti is untrue. The Sharikya, Smriti was written by the great sage Kapila as a commentary to explain the Jnanakanda portion of the Vedas. He hoped in this way to teach the path of liberation. Kapila firmly approved of the Agnihotra Yajnas and other rituals described in the Karmakandra portion of the Vedas. The Svetasvatara Upanishad 5.2 glorifies him in the words Rishi Ri Prasu Tari Kapilam, the great sage Kapila. In his Kapila Smriti, which contains statements like Ata, Tri Vidha, Dukha, Yanta Nivritir, Atyanta Purushartha, the complete cessation of the threefold miseries of the material world is the ultimate goal of human life. And Drishtarta Siddhir Nivritir Apyanuvriti Darshanat. The threefold miseries cannot be completely stopped by any method seen in this world. For whenever they are stopped, it is seen that they always return.
On the Purvapaksha, the first sentence, the Sarika Smriti is untrue.
Mm-hmm.
They are saying that according to Vedanta philosophy, Sarika Smriti is untrue, and then they explain it. It will come ahead. It will be clear.
Mm-hmm. But this is them speaking.
Yeah, this is them speaking.
So they say they're
No, they're making the point that let's be like this. Let's be like saying, you say, according to Vedanta philosophy, that our philosophy of Sharikya Smriti is untrue. And then they go on to, no, but, you know, all it is they leave out the but and the you say. That's all.
It's
yeah.
This Kapila is the atheistic type Kapila?
Means what they're talking about is the atheistic. I'm sure what the Vedas are glorifying is the original. But at the same time, as it's not that these different personalities aren't tasked with writing these different aspects to bring them out. So the Veda might even mention them. But the point is that their conclusion is not the actual conclusion of the Veda. Like here they're saying is that the ultimate goal of life is to stop the cessation of the threefold miseries. Right? So liberation, as you can see, is that they're following the Jnanakanda section. Mm-hmm. Like that. The things that go on in the Karmakanda are fine. Like that. They're not saying that it's wrong, but it's just saying that the perfection is to stop the threefold miseries. So now that's the difficulty with liberation, because it's only a situation. Right? So it's what are you supposed to do in that situation? Just like for us, we don't put any emphasis on even the Vaishnava forms of liberation, because those aren't a goal. See, he's making it as a goal. We'll take it, those are simply a situation. You know, it's just like the goal is to get to the temple. But once you get to the temple, now what? So for us, being in the temple is the situation in which we worship the deities. Does that make sense? So for us, then liberation is a favorable situation to serve the deity, serve Krishna. So it's not a goal. You know, it just happens to be that that's what you do. It's like if you're going to worship the deity, you would have to be on the same planet. You know, you would have to be in a close association. You know, these kind of things. So it's just that's what happens on the side. You know, it's just like if I'm going to serve a meal, there needs to be a plate. But I don't make a big deal out of the plate. Now, if I've ended up, you know, eating out of my hands or off the floor, you know, then getting a plate is a big deal for me. So then I'm going to push about, you know, will we have a plate? Yeah, of course you get a plate. I mean, is it going to be big enough to put everything on? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Will I get it before you put the bring the food? Yeah, you know, because you can understand there's issues. So that's the whole thing. Liberation, you know, the emphasis on liberation means there's issues. Like that. But the Vaishnava, at least, is connected to the Lord. Right? And so then that's positive, but it's not an end. Mm-hmm. So being made is that, yes, the goal of the madhvas is sarup, you know, how you say?
Sarupya.
Mukti. But it's not. The ultimate goal is to serve the Lord in with prema. But they want to do that in that position of sarupya mukti. Mm-hmm. But it's not actually a goal, so it can be mistaken that this is the goal. This is the, but it's not. Service is the goal.
So they misunderstand the statement of Shruta Shvetara Upanishad to be taken to be.
They misunderstand a lot of things. See, it's that they're basing it on, you can say, proper facts, but their interpretation of it is not proper. How they apply it. You know, it's just like if I say, this is a rock. That may be correct, but now what I decide to do with this rock, now that may be illusory. Does that make sense? So, that's the thing with these agnostic schools, is that it's based on Shastra, so many things they, in one sense, you know, have a proper situation. But how they apply that, that's where the problem comes out. Is that something?
Yes, thank you.
Yes.
It looks like they actually don't touch much the intention they have. Like.
No, because the point is the material world's misery. They're suffering. They want to get out of the misery. So therefore, you get rid of the misery by getting rid of the motes. That means you get liberated. So therefore, then you solve your problem.
Yeah,
but it's not positive, because it only gets rid of negative. So when you get rid of negative pain and bring it to neutral and call that happiness, that is material happiness. So even though they're going about it through the process of jnana, it's still material happiness. Like that. They're not catching that. They think, no, this is spiritual, because they're using a spiritual process. But you can use the spiritual process for material purpose. So it's not that... that because you're using a spiritual process that is spiritual, it's the intent is what makes it spiritual. That I'm using the spiritual process to please Krishna. Now you can say is the result will be spiritual. But otherwise, these yanis, they are using the spiritual process simply for material happiness.
Right. Now we can understand why Bhagavatam says it's cheating religion.
It's cheating, yes. All these, that's why all these things other than pure devotional service is all cheating. It may be pious cheating, but it's still cheating. You know, just like, let's say, in a prison. Now there may be some prisoners who follow all the rules, they behave nice, they deal properly, and they would be your ideal prisoners. So, you know, the warden is very happy with them. So if there's a possibility of early parole, they'll get it. But we have to remember, they're still prisoners. Right? So that's the whole thing. So even though the person is very pious, following the Vedas, doing all the religious processes as recommended, but they're still materialists. So until they connect that to the Lord, that's the only, then it becomes spiritual. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Maharaj, regarding when you say that the smritis, these smritis, the jiva smritis are based on Vedas, so then in the Kapila Smriti, the statements that we have come across right now, they have been written originally by this Kapila, or he has extracted from Vedas?
The point is it would be, the concept will be based on the Veda. So whether these exact words are written by, if it's in the Kapila Smriti or whatever it is, Charikya Smriti,
yes,
that would be written by Kapila.
Yeah, it is written in his Kapila Smriti.
Yeah, it would be written by him.
Okay. So concepts are from the Vedas, but writings are his own.
Yes, yes. You know, it's just like Patanjali. It's all the six schools are from the Vedas. Mm-hmm. It's just that they have their own interpretation. That's the point. So, in other words, you can get six major areas of misconception. I mean, you know, six main, and then within those, they're paired together. Right? So, like that, then so in other words, it's atomic theory, or it's analytical, or following the ritual of the Veda or giving up the ritual of the Veda. So it's about that aspect. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So like this, then they apply. So these are how the modes of nature will establish philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. And so these are there. And then everything else is derivatives of these. So anything contemporary, they'll all be taking something from here and there. It's not that they're just taking one line. So Hotamaras is very clear to point this out. It's you're studying the six schools so you know what all the components are. But in a contemporary philosophy, they will be using components from various places. So it's not that they stick just to Jaimini or just to here or just to there. They take from here. So if you know the six schools, then you can deal with any philosophy. But it's not that they're specifically a direct derivative of these six. They just happen to be, you know, left over in their consciousness from previous life, and they put it together. You know, whatever's their method of realization, like taking a bath or something, or, you know, whatever's the method, right? Like that. Okay. He explained the words vimukta, mokshartam, Svartari va pradanasya. The pradan creates the material world either to fulfill the living entity's material desires or grant them liberation. Right? So the whole thing is that it's doing this to fulfill the desires. But what's being left out here is, why would dead matter care? Like, you know, it's like you're walking around in nature somewhere, you go to sit on the rock's at a little bit of a funny angle. Does the rock adjust because it's trying to be nice to you, or it wants you to be more detached so it moves a bit more so it's more uncomfortable? You know, the point is why would Pradhan, this dead matter, then have this conscious effort? So that's what's left out. So in other words, consciousness is there, but not from the dead matter. It's through the dead matter, but it's coming from the Supreme.
So can we say that even this particular concept is their own concocted one and not based on the Vedas?
Everything's based on the Veda, it's just their interpretation of it. See, one has to be able to go beyond just the word itself. Because if you're going to say the word itself, no, this is not directly from the Veda. But it's not that the words used aren't Vedic words.
They're Vedic words.
Yes, but how they put it together, then that's the problem. Because the point is yes, the material energy is doing that. But why it's doing that? Because the Supreme Lord is doing that, and it's being carried out by the material nature. But to say that the material nature itself is doing that, that's bogus. But that the aspects of fulfilling the living entity's desires or not, that is being done, carried out by the material energy. But it's carried out by. That means carried out, it means it's someone else's work. Does that make sense? So that's what we're meaning, is that they're taking it only up to a point and then stopping and now saying this is the absolute when it's not. So that it has these elements, those are correct, but that they stop at that point, that's not correct.
Right.
Yes.
So according to them, pradhan is dead matter? It's not spiritual?
Yes. We read that in the Sankhya.
Yeah. Means this. The jiva is, but at the same time is not. They're conscious, but that's the whole point is that for one aspect of their philosophy, it works that they're conscious and they're the controllers. Another aspect, then you know, they can't say where they come. That's the problem, all these things. Is when you get down to this point, You know, it means the you know, at the point of the, between the, you could say the pradhan and mahatattva, that's where all these philosophies fall apart. Up to that point, they may have a good, you know, foundation. But up to at that point, that's where they fall apart. Because they can't explain, actually, what is chit achitishwara, sadhana sadhya. They can't explain that. They can use all kinds of nice, you know, Vedic jargon and rituals and concepts, but they can't actually put it together in its real form. You know, it's like probably once there was some big Sanskrit scholar and he came and visited Prabhupada. And I think he would talk in Sanskrit and Prabhupada would answer him in English. You know, so Prabhupada knew what he was saying, but he just, you know, he didn't want to get into this whole thing. And so then at one point Prabhupada asked, can you explain what's the supreme, what's, you know, like this. Oh, this is a very difficult topic, you know, very broad, taking, you know, so much, you know, discussion and all that. And after he said all that, then he turns to an 8-year-old Gurukul kid and says, you know, so what's the supreme absolute truth? And he said, Krishna, the supreme personality of Godhead. Then he turned back to the pandit and said, was that so difficult? You know, it's like, you know. So that's the thing, is that the taste is in the speculation. That's the problem. So because of that, it's overemphasized. Does that make sense? That's the whole thing. So it becomes too dramatic. So it's just like the karmis, they overemphasize, you know, it's just like, yes, you should take up Krishna consciousness. No, but what about the family? What about your duties and all that? Yeah, you do those in connection with Krishna. No, but what about taking care of, you know, in other words, they're overemphasizing because it's already part. You know, like the plate. Same, the jnanis do the same thing. So the scholars and that, they overemphasize the speculative importance. So if you can't use big fancy words and you're not, you know, going on and humming and hawing and, you know, in all the different concepts and all these things, then they don't find the taste is there. They feel insecure because that's their identity. Just like for the karmi, their identity is the pursuit of dharma, artha, and kama. And so then for the jnani, the pursuit is that mental speculation. So that's their taste. So when that's not cultivated or encouraged or even allowed, then they become very, how you say? Not inspired. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so it's like we're running a Vedanta Sutra course here. Right? Do we see any, you know, who identify them as, you know, as you know, how you say, scholastic people here? No, they won't come because there's no speculation. Because that's the taste. You know, or we teach Varnashram and all that. And all that. So those who are really committed to enjoy, they won't come either because it's not about that. So that's the thing, is that we study the karma and jnana, but in relation to bhakti, as part of bhakti. You know, as assistance to bhakti. So that's not tasty for someone who wants, you know, material benefit. So, yeah. So that's what happens, is they have a particular thing, and that's what they want. And if they don't get that, they won't take part.
So, in that scholar coming, so Prabhupada pointed out the boy. And he said that here, even a child knows who is Krishna. So the scholar came back. Yeah, he may know Krishna, but he doesn't know to what extent Krishna is great. So Prabhupada replied, that even Krishna doesn't know.
Yes. Very good. Okay. The words, achet tana, atan, Achetanatve pi chiravach cheshti tari padanasya. Although it is lifeless and unconscious, the pradhan creates this world just as milk spontaneously creates cheese. You leave your milk in a pot on the counter and all that, and you come back and there's this nice well waxed, round of Gouda cheese when you come back in later, right? You know, it's spontaneous. It just happens.
I would follow their philosophy.
Yes, because you know it doesn't spontaneously become cheese. You had to do a lot of work, exact, temperature, this, that, or something. Spontaneous, but they're forgetting is that the whole material energy is there. There's higher powers. So, yes, milk does turn into cheese, but through endeavor. Yes, so where is that coming from? That's the thing, is they only take the parts they like. You know, it's like anybody. They take the parts they like, and so then they'll emphasize that. Oh, it's no big deal, this, that, and like that. And other statements of his writings, the truth that insentient pradhan is the independent creator of the material universes, right? Insentient pradhan, that is lifeless and unconscious, is the independent creator. How does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And they're supposed to be jnanis, right? So that's the difficulty. If the idea that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the original cause of everything is accepted, then the statements of the Kapila Smriti must be held to be useless. Exactly. Right? But because they're committed to it, they're going to say, if we accepted the Vedanta philosophy, then we'd have to say it's useless. They would also, but they're not going to accept it, so. This is especially so because the Kapila Smriti is a book of philosophy with the understanding of the ultimate truth as its sole objective. Right? So they're trying to say is no, but it's glorious like that. For this reason, the Vedanta texts must be interpreted in such a way that they do not contradict the great Kapila Smriti. So their point is that since it's about the absolute truth and that being a glorious thing, therefore we have to interpret the Veda that it upholds this Kapila Smriti. Does that make sense? So they're trying to point it out. It's just like we're saying, yes, so because, we're trying to do a really nice thing here, how you say, equity, liberty, fraternity, it's a good thing. Therefore, we must interpret the Vedic text in context of this so that we get this, because this is such an important and glorious position. Right? And Robespierre was willing to lose his head just for this, right? It was such a great endeavor. Right?
And the ultimate truth for them is pradhan.
Ultimate truth for them is liberation.
That means
but, pradhan may be a situation for them, but, it's that. They're trying to get back to, the Krishna's trying to get back to the garden, and they're trying to get back to the pradhan, maybe everyone's trying to get back somewhere. In other words, there's something wrong here. Everyone's trying to get it appears that something's wrong here. Right? Does that make sense? So this is their logic. Rather than, okay, you have the Shastras, it's correct. So they're, in one sense, they're kind of avoiding saying it's not correct. They're just saying it must be interpreted in this way. So even if the direct meaning of a verse would contradict the Kapila Smriti, we would interpret it so that that fault wouldn't be there. That's their idea. Right? So in this way, then they're saying, it's like, saying, Prabhupada's from the spiritual world, so he's great, he's fabulous, but because he's from the spiritual, he doesn't really know the material world, right? So therefore, when it comes to doing things here, we're the ones that should say what goes on, not him. He should just, tell us how to chant Hare Krishna and remember Krishna. But practical stuff we should do because we're from here. We know that.
So that's deism.
It's deism. Mm-hmm. So they're deifying the Vedas. In other words, they're correct, but they must be understood this way. And it's not that the idea of understanding the Veda through the Acharya isn't correct. It's just that it can't deify the Veda in the process. So therefore, the Shruti is there, then the Smriti. And then we have the... So Vedanta would be, in that way, then Smriti. Right? And so then it would be... given by Vyasadeva, but then our acharyas, all their writings on that, that's what we would follow. But it has to all be in line. It can't be contradictory. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So because of the material, they can't understand, because as we see, the spiritual has to be revealed. You can't understand it otherwise. You can get up to the point that there's some unlimited, unchanging entity, but that's as far as you can get. You can't get beyond that. So the consciousness of it, the desire of the Supreme, all these they can't understand. So that's why their philosophies can never go to that extent. So, yes.
So now about the Smriti, here we have the Kapila Smriti. Who is, I can say, decided? We decide that this book is a real Smriti and that book is not a real Smriti.
Shruti means it's the Veda itself.
Yes.
Right, so the Veda, the Samhita, Brahmana, Aranyakas, and the Upanishads. That's the Veda. Now, conversations or discussions or texts based on that, those texts, that's Smriti. So Smriti means tradition. Right? It means what great personalities have done. Like, let's say, Narada Pancharatra. It's a discussion between Lord Shiva and Narad Muni. You know, or the Bhagavatam is a discussion between Sukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Parikit. So you'll see in all the Smritis, they're all discussions between someone, or they're like Vyasadeva, he's writing a specific thing down and making a presentation. Like that. But, so, the whole idea is that someone has taken the Vedic conclusions and then made a presentation to try to make them more, you know, applicable in a particular area or something. Does that make sense? So the Veda describes everything, but then to describe the deity worship part of it, that's the Pancharatra. So then that's Smriti. Or the histories that are there, the detail of that, then that's the Purana. Or the, does that make sense? So that's the whole idea, is that that's how then you get these aspects. So it's all there in the Veda. So you can study them directly from there, but then the qualification required. And then also, as Jiva Goswami points out, I think there's only about six, means the Brahmanas, means the Samhitas, you know, they're there. They're there. But then all these other aspects of them, the Brahmanas, Aranyakas, and all that, and the different schools that are there, there's only about 6% is, you know, known. And that he was writing 500 years ago. So the main text is there, but all these other texts that give an understanding of it, they're missing. So one wouldn't get that full understanding. So that's why then the Smriti becomes more important, because those who knew the Shruti, they're the ones who made these discussions. And so their discussion, because these discussions, it doesn't have to be now. They don't have to be called Yuga discussions. They're discussions at any time. They could be thousands, millions of years ago. And so those discussions, then that is then they who are practitioners of following the Vedas, those who are, you know, great personalities, how they understood and practiced, that's your Smriti. Then, for the particular, you know, sampradaya like this, then there'll be particular shastras that'll be their core shastra. Like for us, the core shastra is Bhagavatam. All of the shastras are connected. So Bhagavad Gita is a preliminary study to Bhagavatam. And the Chaitanya Charitamrita is a graduate study, postgraduate study of Bhagavatam. So in other words, Bhagavatam is the degree. That's the graduate course. Postgraduate, and then you know, what you require before that. And then all other books are all based around that. So that, what's the devotional aspects being given, that'll be Nectar of Devotion. You know, and then all the other books that are based on that, and then all the 10th canto, the pastimes, and then so many aspects are brought out there. Does that make sense? So in this way, then they all connect. So everybody has their scripture that is the main core thing, and then from that, then they deal with everything. But in this case, they're separating it from the Veda, because the direct meaning, if it supports the Kapila Smritis, they'll accept it, but if it doesn't, they reinterpret it. You know, so that's what you see Shankara does. They all do that.
Because it's not parampara.
Yes. But that, or even they have their parampara, but it's not Vaishnava. Yes. So that's the point, is these six schools aren't Vaishnava lines. And so, therefore, they're guaranteed material. They will. None of these six schools will ever get you out of the material world, or at least not for any length of time. You know. But generally speaking, people think they're liberated. Just as people think they're enjoying, they think they're liberated. You know. Right. So that's you know how you say. Enjoyment and liberation are a state of mind. Right? You know. Yeah.
Huh? It's a start.
Yes, it's a start. You know, so yeah, so that you have that hope, and you know, yeah. So that's how they do it. Because people want this, they accept it, even though it's bogus. They accept it. You know? Like I once saw this a person. They were a smoker, and. They got, you know, throat cancer, so they, you know, lost whatever it is there. And so then, you know, they have that little hole that they breathe through. And the person was talking and smoking at the same time through that little hole that the cigarettes are not the cause of cancer. This is bogus. It's a propaganda, and, you know, this is all nonsense. So that's the thing. People believe what they want to believe, you know. Okay. This interpretation, even if it contradicts the Manusmriti and other Smriti Shastras, would not make these scriptures useless. Because these scriptures explain the Karmakanda portion of the Vedas, and because they explain the path of Dharma and not theoretical philosophy, right? Because their point is that it's giving practical philosophy how you can, through applying Shanti in your life, come to a practical realization of, you know, how you say, your position outside the functioning of the modes of nature. So in that way, they call it practical, but it's not that practical. Because these kind of paths are very, very difficult to operate, and they'll give temporary results. Because if you're talking about eternal, then even if you're in Brahman for a few lifetimes of Brahma, it's still temporary. You know? And most people never even get that far. Right? Because it said Mahakalapura was very great, but it didn't say there were unlimited living entities there. Just there was a whole bunch of them. So that means not many people are making it there. Right. They would not be made useless by contradicting their philosophical basis. Right? So they're trying to say is that their path is fine even if it contradicts the Veda because of the greatness of the goal of what they're trying to get. In other words, you know, the end justifies the means. So because we have such a glorious end, therefore if the means seem contradictory and don't support the Vedas and all that and all circumstances, it still doesn't matter because our process is so practical and so glorious. Is that problem? Siddhanta, Srila Vyasadeva addresses these views in the following sutra. Sutra 211. Smit ana vakshasa dosha prasanga iti chen nanya smit yavakasha dosha prasangata. Smriti, the Kapila Smriti philosophy. Ana vakshasa, want of application, redundancy. Dosha, fault. Prasanga, result. Iti, thus. So does that mean that so many people, they, in their house, couldn't properly make the, I say, rice and dal pancakes. There'd always be a fault in it. So because everybody would complain about it, they just called it dosa. So what do you mean it's a dosa? What are you complaining about?
I'm sorry, Maharaj. There's a slight mistake from my side. The dosha in the sutra and the dosha down is different. You know? Actually, the S has the mark which underneath the S, that the dot, you know, that is missing here. That's why it's dosa. Otherwise, it is dosha is correctly.
Oh, so then okay, but still, people means you're talking in Tamil. Does Tamil make a difference between all these letters? Right, kaka gaga na is all one letter, right? So
okay.
I'm just saying it. That way, then everyone leaves you alone, right? No. Yes.
When you're discussing in the Mahabharata about Dharma Dosha, you said that when you go to Govinda's next time, take all those out except for Dharma Dosha.
Yeah, don't take that. Leave that one out. That's not a good one. Prasangaha, result, iti, thus, che, if, na, not, anya, other, smriti, the smriti. Avakasha, non-scope or redundancy, dosha, fault, prasanga, because of the results. If one argues that refuting the conclusions of Shankya Smriti would make that scripture useless, the answer is no, for accepting it would render the conclusions of other smritis useless. Sutra Prakashika. So their point is that it would make it useless, so therefore it has such a great result, so we can't make it useless. But the point is if we accept it, it makes other smritis useless. So saying that, we can't make this one useless, but we can make all the others useless, then that's not a good argument. Because the point is that smriti shouldn't be made useless. Then the point is they can't make theirs not useless at the expense of everyone else's.
So in short, we are saying over here that let the Jiva Smriti be useless, but not the smritis which are based on the Vedas, in confusion.
Yeah, well, yes, basically. Means that they're trying to say that you can't take this approach because it'll make these shastras useless. But the point is you can't do that at the expense of all the others. So we see, what does the Veda say? All these other ones agree with the Veda. So Veda says this, these other smritis say the same thing. So wouldn't that be appropriate? So now Veda says one thing and the Kapila Smriti says something else. Now that would be the one having a problem. It's not that all of them all have a different conclusion and they don't match the Veda. Right? So therefore, they match the Veda. The Veda says what it says. They say the same thing in support of. So therefore, the odd one out is the Kapila Sutra. Like that. So they shouldn't use it to... That their one that contradicts the Vedas would be useful, and all the ones that support the Veda would be useless. Right? That's not appropriate. Sutra Prakashika. The Sutra card denies to accept Shankya Smriti, since they promote a meaning contrary to the Shruti, and advertise faulty conclusions against the teachings of the Vedas. Hence, that scripture, which is in perfect harmony with the real conclusions of Vedas, should be accepted. So we're not saying this one or that one, we're saying which ones are in harmony, perfect harmony, with the real conclusions. That's what you accept. And other things then we're not accepting. Sri Govindabhashya, Siddhanta. Anavakasha means having no opportunity for use. We're not saying it's useless. There's just no opportunity for using it. We can't think of any situation in which it could be used. Or having a useless subject. That's the other way. Yeah, you can't say, no, we're not saying what you're saying is wrong. We just can't find anything right about it. Just a very pleasant way of... Yes.
Maharaj, if you say it's not wrong, you just say it's useless. It might be correct.
It's useless, yeah. Yeah. There would arise a fault of making the Shankya Smriti is useless by concluding that Brahman is the cause of the world in Vedanta. Therefore, one should explain those Vedantic texts in an opposite way to make Shankya text useful, right? So that's their idea, is that if we use the Vedantic texts in their natural way, then it would explain that Brahman is the cause of creation. So that would make the Shankya texts wrong. So their idea is you shouldn't therefore explain it that way. Right? Vedanta can be wrong, but Shankya shouldn't be wrong. Then it will be useful. Right? The answer is no. Why? By doing so, one would make useless other smritis like Manu, which agree with Vedanta, and say that Brahman is the sole cause. This would be a greater fault, right? Because Manu is a very everybody accepts Manu. So if you're following the Vedas, then that means you have to have your lifestyle. And so then the lifestyle is Dharma. So from the Dharma Sutras, then you have the Dharma Shastras. And so of the Dharma Shastras, Manu is the main. So it would be the text that all persons would accept. Then after that, how much other Shastra supports from others, like we accept Manu and then Parasara and Yajnavalkya as the support, as the main support. So others may have other smritis that they would consider the important ones. So, yeah, okay. This would be a, okay. So by those who agree by saying that they're wrong, that's a greater fault than one that doesn't agree in saying that's wrong. The Smritis state that the Supreme Lord is the cause of creation and destruction of the universe. They do not agree with the theory enunciated by Kapila. Manu says, this universe was dark, unperceived, without qualities, inconceivable, unknown in all ways, as if sleeping. Then the self-born, invisible Lord, having the power of all elements, manifesting the universe, dispelling the darkness, became visible. He who is beyond the senses, who is subtle, invisible, and eternal, who consists of all beings and is inconceivable, appeared by his own will. Right? So that they're saying is that the material energy is converting by its own independent position to fulfill the desire of the jiva, either for karma or liberation. Right? But here we see, it's the Lord, he has his own will. He is performing all these things. Desiring to create various offspring from his own body, he first created water and impregnated that water with his semen. That became a golden sphere shining like the sun. In that egg, Brahma, the grandfather of all planets, was born. Manu 1:5-9. So this is just after then, when the sages ask the questions like that, and so then after that, then they speak. So they came. So the first four verses you see is the invocation. Then starting from the fifth, immediately they start with the Supreme Lord and the creation, how he's the cause of creation. So in the modern academic field, then they'll consider that this particular chapter of, Manu or any other of the Vedic literatures are all interpolation. Because why means we're having a book about Dharma Shastra. Why do we have to talk about the Lord and creation and all these things? We don't require that to talk about that. So they'll say it's put in later. Right? But the difficulty comes is that what's the purpose of all this? Why are there laws? Where did the laws come from? Why should people follow laws in the first place? Who are the people following it? Where are they being applied? All these things. So that you have to establish, that comes from the Lord. Because the purpose of following laws is to please the Lord. By pleasing the Lord, then one can elevate oneself. Right? If that's done in devotion, then that takes you back to the spiritual world. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that therefore these shastras all start with creation. And that's a point for them. Because if you don't start with that, now you can interpret it any way you like. Right? Now, if I take out the creation part, I have the laws. I may like these laws or not. I think they're nice or not. Or some are nice, some are not nice. So according to my own idea, I can present. Now, if we start with, no, it's God made the creation and all the laws are based on him and his desire, and this is the way things have to function. Now, can I just have an opinion where I like this or not, or I'll follow this or not? So that's the whole thing, is that it starts already from the conclusion. So that means everything else is conclusive. So for if you want to speculate, your first thing you have to do is get rid of conclusion. Because you can't speculate on conclusion. It's already concluded. Does that make sense? It's like, if the preparation is already cooked, what does it mean? You go into the kitchen and flip the pot and do different things, turn on and off the stove, and it has no meaning. Right? So you already get rid of the conclusion, then you can present your opinion. But so the Vedas, they start from that conclusion and then give the detail and end with a conclusion. So
establish the authority.
They establish the authority, yes. Because otherwise, then what's the point? You know, why have Shastra if it's not authoritative? Right? And it's authoritative because it comes from authority. Right? In some sense. You know, it's like a government officer has authority because there's a government. Right? You know, just on his own, he stands up and says, you know, I'm the king here, you know. There's only three of us. What do you mean? You know, so...
Many times it so happens that you say in the classes, like, Shastra Sardha Praman. Guru Sadhu Shastra, like we are saying here, they are only telling whatever their philosophy is there, that is the...
From Guru says, yeah.
So that they are establishing, that is the truth, than the Shastra.
Yeah, but you can't follow Guru against Shastra.
Yes.
That's the whole point, is that Guru is in line with Shastra. So the Acharya, as Prabhupada points out, Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Acharya follows very carefully all the rules and regulations. Though when he is establishing the preaching, for those he's preaching to, he first establishes Krishna consciousness, and then as they become purified, then they can start following the rules and regulations. You know? So it's like you see, is that the devotees first, they're all talking about Krishna, chanting, taking prasad, but there was no such thing as Mangalartik and these kind of things like that. So he starts with Krishna, the core points, and then expands and all the support for that. In other words, the primary is established first, then you add secondary as someone can do, because secondary then is based on your nature. So if the nature is not very developed, then the secondary can't be that developed. But the primary has to be there. Right? Then you expand from there. Right? So we can't then take that principle and then make our own philosophy that doesn't agree with what Prabhupada says or the scriptures say. You know what I'm saying? That's what Kapila Muni's done here. Is this whoever this, or they called him a rishi before, whatever this atheistic Kapila, he's taken, you know, a principle and then done it. Now they're following and says, no, but Guru says. So Shastra shouldn't contradict that. No, it's supposed to be Shastra says, Guru shouldn't contradict it. If Shastra is the basis, then we know Shastra through Guru. So, yeah.
Many times devotees also take in between, like in Manu also, they don't see the first part, how it is about creation at Varnashrama.
No, they just take what they like or basically reject what they don't like. Basically, that's like that. Because unless you understand this principle, how do you reconcile everything? Because it's such so broad, and it will go beyond the capacity of most individuals to deal with. Because it's a Shastra meant for Brahmins and Kshatriyas. Because they're the only ones that use it as such. Everybody will follow it, but as far as understanding the widest range, it's just like, let's say, a Vaishya or Shudra, they only need to know the context that deal with them. They don't need to, let's say, the Brahmacharis are there. And so therefore then their child will be trained. But the detail of that, they don't know. That the Brahmin has to know. The Kshatriya has to know to make sure that the Brahmin's doing what he's doing. You know? Or to give facility. So, to know the full range of the Manu, only Brahmin Kshatriyas need to know that. Vaishya Shudras will know according to their application. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So they don't need to know more than that. Like all the laws, like so much of the book is just administrative laws. The common person doesn't need to know that. He just has to know what laws apply to him. You know, don't steal your, don't get envious or take your neighbor's donkey. You know, that kind of stuff. Does that make sense?
Understanding things like to start with a conclusion and after the detail and listening and finish with the conclusion.
Yes.
So it is new for most of us.
Yes, because the modern academy doesn't deal like this. They'll do the thesis, antithesis, synthesis.
Yes.
But we notice in this that conclusion is left out.
Yes.
So it's just how you can speculate. So it's just what we're used to. So starting from the Greeks, that hasn't been a prominent understanding. So the Vedics, so that's what these adhikaranas are, is they're establishing that first. So you're establishing the conclusion by presenting it, and then giving explanation, and then having explained, now you reiterate the point or make it practical. So that's the Vedic approach. That's why Krishna says in the Gita, he is Siddhanta. Of all the 16 or 18 forms of logic, he is the Siddhanta. That's the one. So if you're not starting and ending with Siddhanta, you're not actually dealing with, in a way that Krishna is pleased. So that's why then quoting Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada says in Vedic circles, then they would discuss according to these principles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to bring about what's the point. You know, and so we can see it's not emotional. Right? Because the Kapila, they point out, yeah, if you say like this, then what we're doing is useless. But we're pointing out, no, it's like this, so therefore it's not useless. Right? While generally in a modern discussion, that point of bringing up how something's wrong or useless, that would generally be responded to by emotion. You know, so how you say ad hominem is the natural go-to method. You know, so whatever they say, just find some fault and you're done. So that's how the training is establish yourself as an authority by finding fault in everyone else. So in other words, the person who's in the chair, he's the one that no one else can find a fault with, or at least not big enough to get rid of them. And so basically you have to wait until they die. Then you can find fault and then move on to the new, you know, so like that, you know. And if he lives a long time, then you got a problem. You know.
So we need to develop some specific quality in order to catch this Vedic system.
Yes, that's the, as you notice, Manu, when he actually starts to describe, well, actually, he doesn't describe there, he does at the end, at the conclusion of the Ashram Dharma, he describes 10 qualities required to apply the Dharma Shastra. And of that, the 5 are main. They're the main ones, and then from that you have an application. Like that, you know, like that. So, but we see as Narad Muni, when he explains, he starts with the qualities. He gives 30 qualities, including the devotional process, to be able to follow it properly. Means if you want to follow the Daiva Varna, just Varnashram, then Manu, if you follow what Manu says, that's enough. But if you want to follow Daiva Varnashram, then these 30 qualities. So an obstacle in taking up religion from a irreligious background. Is that the qualities required to practice religion are not there. That's why then we see is Prabhupada's method that he's giving is that you start with the Krishna consciousness. Because that's natural to the soul. It's beyond the conditioning. So that means despite conditioning, everybody can be engaged in it. Then as they become purified from this, the good qualities manifest. Then you can introduce the religious processes as they become qualified. But the preacher themselves are following everything very nicely. Does that make sense? Not this thing that, oh, we adjust for them. No, we follow what we're supposed to. Like we see, Bhavishu Purana explains that Jesus, he would follow Dharma, himself, but he would preach Upadharma, or Subdharma, because the concept of Dharma was so foreign that they just, you know, he just, be nice, be good, you know, don't take your neighbor's donkey, you know, stuff like that. It's just it'd be like that. And then the idea is that you take it forward into the pure devotion. But the problem is because in the material world we see that we've come to here because of only seeing the secondary, not the primary, then even you bring in a devotional service, we tend to still just see the secondary. You know, it's like huge arguments can come up over whether chanting your japa sitting down is proper, or you can stand and walk and chant. You can have big, you know, fights over this. Because it's all about the external. It's not about, are you absorbed in Krishna? So if you're absorbed in Krishna by walking, that's better. If you're absorbed in Krishna by sitting, that's better. You know? Does that make sense? So that's the whole the thing is that it's for the purpose of doing, just like, let's say, in chanting of Gayatri. Then the Manu recommends that the morning Gayatri you stand, the evening Gayatri you sit. Right? Now, why would that be? You know, in the morning, you tend to fall asleep. So if you're standing, then a little harder. In the evening, you're restless because, you know, you see all the animals when the twilight comes, then they all start getting like this. You sit. Otherwise, you'll just move about and not get like that. So you sit. Right? You know, and so that's then how it's done. Point is to be absorbed in the mantra. So missing that point, then we'll fight over this. Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty that comes up, is that Niyamagraha means, in both cases, whether you follow or don't follow the rule, the primary point is missed. Right? So if you're following the rules, then the primary is for the pursuance of the primary, now that's nicely situated. Right? Now if you're following the primary but not understanding the rules or like that, it's a beginning stage, because at least you have the primary. But with time, you naturally add the secondary, because it's the natural form to express the primary. Does that make sense? You know, it's like people can't cook. Okay, we start with a microwave and some instant noodles, right? But with time, then you start to show them actually how these things work. Does that make sense? So, but, you know, yes.
Actually, as you said, like this, all these are pure devotees, like Manu, Narad Muni, and
yes,
Jesus. But when it came to Srila Prabhupada and Mahaprabhu, he is giving first primary, that is Krishna consciousness, then automatically the qualities will manifest.
Yes.
But how we can understand that they...
Well, you see, they also talk from the primary. It's just that having introduced it, then they get right into the details.
Okay.
So if we take the first chapter of Manu and explain it, I don't think any devotee will have any problem with it. Only when you start getting near the end of it, when it starts talking about if you don't follow these scriptural rules and hear from proper authority, then technically you shouldn't be involved with such people.
Mm.
Like that. That's the only point where it'll get. But basically the whole thing will be there. And then at the end, where they talk the philosophy again, there won't be any problem. You know? And then part of, let's say, you know, the philosophical aspects of the sannyasa. You know, so there's verses throughout the whole thing that one could take those and no one will have any problem with, because they're going beyond the conditioning.
Okay.
You know, it's just like of all the religious rules to follow, then the most important for a Brahmin is chanting of his japa. That's the most important. All if he's doing that and no other rules, meaning, of course, he's going to be taking his bath, but means he's not necessarily practicing any other lifestyle. He's not following a lifestyle of, let's say, you know, teaching Shastra or being an Ayurvedic doctor or doing all these different things and doing all the Shraddha rites, this and that. If he's just doing his japa, then he's rightly situated. Like that. You understand? So that's the conclusion. So we see is that's what Lord Chaitanya is giving, because that's there. So it is in the so what we're saying doesn't contradict the scriptures.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? you know. And so, yeah, so that's the whole point, is that, yeah. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Parashara says, Vishnu Shakshad Udbhutam Jagat Tatraiva Cha Stitam Stiti Samyama Kar Tashao Jagato Sya Jagach Cha Syaha. The universe arises from Vishnu and remains in him. He is the creator, maintainer, and destroyer of the universe. He is the universe. Right? So the universe comes from him. It remains in him. You know, it arises from him, it remains in him because it is him, right? So he creates it, he maintains it, he destroys it. So it's all him, all the three phases. Right, so as the creator, he's Hiranyagarbha. As the maintainer, he's Vishnu. And as the destroyer, he's Shiva. Right? But it's all him. So all these are support. So Vishnu is the main. Just as Bhagavan is the main, and Brahman and Paramatma are extensions of this, so in the same way, is Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva is all him, but Vishnu is the support of the other two. Because there's no point of creating if you're not maintaining. And destruction is just because of the temporariness of the material world. Therefore, it ends. The maintenance ends. Right? Because otherwise, in the spiritual world, there's no creation, there's no destruction. So there is no aspect of Brahma and Shiva. Does that make sense? From the material point of view. Yeah. Vishnu Purana 1.31. Just as the spider from within himself expands thread through his mouth, plays with it for some time and eventually swallows it. Similarly, the Supreme Lord produces the universe and then withdraws it. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.9.21. Right? So it gives that example of how the spider makes the nest and then winds it back. It makes the net and then winds it back up. So it's based on the desire. So the Lord, because of his desire, then it's manifest. And then when he doesn't, then it's wound up. There are other statements in scriptures also. These smritis do not promote karma kanda, action. They promote purification of the heart. This is true of the smritis as well, shrutis as well. Tam etam veda nu vachanena. The Brahmanas try to know the Lord through studying the Vedas. Read Aranyaka Upanishad 1.5.4.22. Even in the Vedas, one will sometimes see descriptions of material results like rain, suns, or swarga. And one can experience the results also. However, that is for the purpose of producing faith in the scriptures, right? So if you can get some benefit, then you tend to have faith. So that's the whole idea. That is being get. So you understand what is the sambandha abhideya and prayojana. And because there's a prayojana, therefore, then you feel, yes, I can have faith in this. Because only if there's faith, you'll make the endeavor. But that's not actually that they're promoting karma kanda. They may have karma kanda, but they don't promote it. Is that? Yeah. Even in the Vedas, And one can... The conclusion of scriptures is that the Lord is the creator. Sarve Veda Yat Padam Amananti. All the Vedas praise him. Katha Upanishad 1.3.15. Narayana Para Veda. The Vedas conclude that Narayana is supreme. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.5.15. So that's actually what they're promoting. So they're not promoting the karma on these other sections. They're promoting that service to the Lord. So that's the whole point, is that they're basing things, the Kapila Smriti is basing on the Veda, but they're only taking secondary aspects of the Veda. Because performing karma, that you become purified, right? And then that purification, then you are able to apply that in liberation. And that's the end of what you're doing. That's all material. The point is these situations are to bring about Krishna consciousness. That's why we're involved. We put ourselves, situate ourselves religiously, because in that purified state, then we're not distracted by sense gratification. So then we can develop better qualities. These qualities are used in the Lord's service. Right? By becoming detached, by these qualities further being applied, then we become detached from the material karma, and that then situates us on a spiritual platform in which we can continue our service. So in other words, we're performing service in a conditioned state, or we're performing service in a liberated state. But the point is that service is the goal. That's why even though we're not liberated, we perform service. Right? In the same way, the primary is established, understanding the supreme. That being established, then you take it from there. Does that make sense? So, as whatever an individual's understanding of the supreme or inclination towards the supreme, that first is cultivated. Then you start to show is that in cultivation, since it's about pleasing the supreme, right? Then there's proper ways to do things. So it's not speculative what you do. So there's always going to be a form. I want a particular result, there's a particular form. Right? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? You know, if I want what do you call it? That they make it for a snack with old bread, lost bread.
As a soup?
No. You take the bread and you put it in batter and all that, and then they fry it.
Toast?
Yeah, well, we call it French toast because it's that, but I think in France they call it lost bread.
Yes, yes. And you can use it as a soup
also. Yeah, yeah. Soup, you say, okay, whatever it is. So, The point is that someone has an inclination towards the supreme, whatever level that is, because everybody is dealing with the supreme, right? It's just that they don't know it. So you have to find that point and then bring that point reveal about the supreme. Then, as they're able to accommodate that, then you apply, right? So you want to do something, you have to start with what's there, just like we say. If you want to have, what do you call them, croutons or whatever?
Crouton.
In soup, you have to start with bread. You can't start with a potato. You know what I'm saying? You take the potato and slightly put it in the oven on a low heat to just dry it out a little bit, and then put that into your soup. It's not going to be good. So you want the supreme, you have to follow the rules that will get it. It's not speculative. So this whole idea of following laws, that's just natural for anybody who is intelligent and successful. Right? There's plenty of people who are intelligent, not successful, and people who are successful, not intelligent. So neither of these are interested in that, but people who are intelligent and successful, they are able to appreciate that you have to follow a particular set of rules to get a particular result. Yes. You have 4 feet, but they only makes 3 sounds. There's the first foot, then the next two hit together, then the last foot. It's not that 4 feet are making, it's only 3 sounds. Interesting. Yeah. You know, when they go slower, then you only get 2 sounds. You know, like that. So.
They are following some rules.
Yes, they're following rules. You know, and then they can give names to it. Just what's the natural thing. A horse does these things. You know, they you know, whatever it is, they walk, they canter, then they gallop, they, you know, they have names. And, one cannot promote the meaning of the Vedas by reliance on Shankya Smritis, since those smritis promote a meaning contrary to the shruti, right? Because we're saying the shruti is promoting that one's purification of the heart to come to the understanding of worship of the Supreme. So in other words, they're promoting worship of the Supreme. You're going to do that through purification of the heart. Through purification of the heart, you can use the process of karma or jnana or upasana. These are the ways, methods you can use. In other words, so the karmakanda, jnanakanda, upasanakanda, they are simply the methods that you use to purify the heart, develop the proper qualities to worship the Supreme Lord. That's why it's called the slow path, because they're taking it that way. Well, devotion is the fast path because you start at the other end. You start with the Lord, then you, by doing that, then you add in the activities, then you start to regulate it and make the structure. So,
is there any relevance that they are inconsistent in their basic philosophy and process and goal, whereas the Vedanta is very consistent?
Yes, yes. But the point is when you have a material desire, you don't mind the inconsistency.
Right, yeah.
Because it fulfills your desire.
Okay. Weird for me.
Yeah. No, but people do that in the way of, you know how you say it's like you have one set of rules for yourself, another set for everyone else.
I know.
Yeah. So that's what they're doing because it's inconsistent. But because it works for them, they don't mind it. They're comfortable with it. In fact, they might even promote it. So Kapila is someone who then he came up with his own understanding. So we can say he's very thoughtful and very intelligent. And must have certain good qualities, otherwise how can he follow this process that he's recommending? But it's the process that works for his conditioning to get the material result he wants. But one of the things within the material is calling material spiritual. Right? No one wants to be called a materialist. So then you try to euphemize it by making it look better. You know, does that make sense? You know, so that's always what's done. You know, in all the fields, they do that: the social field, the economic field, the political field, the intellectual field. We agree to disagree, or you know, they come up with all these things. So it just makes it sound good. So that's all it is doing, is that these Vedic philosophies are the same thing, but just being done on a very refined intellectual platform. And so therefore it requires someone of greater qualifications, like Vyasadeva, therefore to set set this record straight. Mm-hmm.
Just come different ideas to my mind, that they're like sellers, you know, that you are like this, you know, but you are not that.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. Shankar Smritis do not promote clarity by producing a unified meaning of the Vedas. So that's the thing, is someone like Narad Muni, all the contradictory things, seeming contradictory things in the Vedas, he can bring them all together because there's a unified meaning. So, in other words, this is the original unified theory, right? Vedanta is the unified theory because it all brings it together because of Krishna, because all contradictory things are brought together because of this point. While they leaving that point out, all they're dealing with is contradiction, so the part that supports what they do, they accept that. What doesn't, then they reinterpret it. Like that. Thus, the Shankar Smriti, which is contradictory to the Vedas, being manufactured in someone's head, is without authority. One should not fear that those scriptures will then have the fault of being meaningless, because they are. So you don't worry about that. One should not show favor to that Smriti on the basis that it was produced by some authority, because where's their authority? Right. For if one were to favor the many explanations of truth in various smritis with various opinions, the real truth would be inconclusive. One wouldn't be able to come to the proper understanding. Right? So that's why then we have to follow the authority of the Vedas and then the parampara coming from there. Well, here, where his connection is, it's not set, it's just he comes up with it. Right? So. Yeah.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Samaveta Gaurakaya.